Welcome, one and all, once again to Dual Wielding episode 133. We're joined this week by Daniel.
Hello.
And Jason.
I'm back.
It's been a while.
Yes, Jason comes back every Friday the 13th. Yes, and I realize this is recording in, this is what, March the 16th, so it doesn't matter, but it's a joke word. Anyhow, we are here as always to talk about the weekend gaming and what we've been playing and what's been happening. So we're going to kick it off with Daniel, who's been playing the big game of the week,
yep.
The month, maybe?
Well, one of them anyway, because the other was Dark Souls, and I don't like Dark Souls. So Titanfall. I have the game. I've been playing the game quite a lot, actually. I think I've got 25... I'd say I've got 25 hours in it. That includes the time I had on the beta, so it's maybe about 10 hours, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what to say about it. It's the new game from Respawn. The first one. Published by EA. It's a first-person shooter. It's multiplayer only. PC, Xbox One, soon enough Xbox 360, but I, if anybody thinks about getting it on Xbox 360, I would just say no. We haven't seen it.
Earl is.
Yeah. Oh, don't even consider it. The fact that we haven't seen it yet is big alarm bells as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah, there's always been alarm bells. Like I said, I've always hoped that it turns out halfway decent, but yeah.
I would say this is something that somebody brought up on the Titanfall subreddit. There have been no Source games that have been on current last gen that have been in 60 FPS, and 60 FPS is important to this game.
Yes, and it came out, I think the rumor is right now that it's 30 frames and it's 720p on the Xbox 360.
But even then, I would expect, you know, a lot less stuff going on in each match, like way less AI.
Yeah,
everything turned down.
For anybody that's been living under a rock, it's a 6v6 multiplayer game where you get there are sort of two ways to play it. There's Titan, you get a Titan, which everyone gets at some point in the match, which is a big stompy robot, and you can play as a pilot. And the sort of gimmick to it is you get these robots, and if you're not in a robot, you get parkour, which works really well actually. There have been a couple of times where it's kind of like, why are you climbing up the wall? I don't want you to do this. But for the most part, it works really well. You get a good sense of speed and momentum out of it. It's very, like a lot of games you finish and your heart's racing and you have to catch up to real life, like the slow speed of real life. I would say this, there's a lot of, somebody on Reddit was complaining that they don't feel they got a lot out of their $60. And now if you ask me, if you pay $60 for this game, you are paying too much for it. You should not pay $60 because the game has no campaign, despite what it might want you to think. It has, quote, campaign multiplayer, and by that what it means is it has a string of specific maps on specific modes, and it gives you a little cool scripted introduction to them, and that is it.
You're not a fan of the campaign mode?
Had not bothered. It feels like somebody at EA said, look, guys, we have to have something that's called campaign in this game, even if you don't want to make one. So they just strung a couple of maps together and said, look, this is the...
And I've had this discussion with other people online this week as well, and it is a crapshoot. I do agree with the notion that I don't think that a game without any type of single-player component should be full price. And I guess the case I made for it, and, Titanfall varies and stuff like that, is that so much of the value is dependent on how other people play the game than what you get. But like a single-player game, you have a set...
You have a consistent experience at the very least.
Everybody has the same experience, no matter what happens. You might not like that experience, but everybody has the same experience. And I don't mean everybody's going to play the game the same, but it has a beginning, middle, and end, and you can all experience it that way. With a multiplayer game, maybe you want to enjoy it, but you can't get into it because, it seems like this. That I could be mistaken, but from what feedback I've seen, it doesn't have, rank matchmaking. You can end up, somebody was saying that they were on a team with all people in the level 30s versus a bunch of people who were level 30.
Well, it's just like Call of Duty, right?
Yeah. The way the match yeah. works is there's yeah. no ranked at all, and it just bungs people with other people.
Yeah. And Call of Duty works in the sense that they do give you alternatives to train with that. You get single player, you get various modes. They have co-op in recent ones as well.
Right, so but wouldn't you agree there's plenty of people that just buy Call of Duty and never touch
any of
those?
I'm not disagreeing.
So there's plenty of people that see a $60 value in a multiplayer, is de facto a multiplayer-only experience for them. And
I'm not saying that people don't see value in that. I'm just saying that it's not the first time this has come up that I think it's just harder to sell a multiplayer game only. Like Titanfall has the luxury of having a huge marketing
right.
campaign behind it.
It's harder, but I don't think to me, it's like it shouldn't be full price. I would agree it's harder to make that sell, but if they're capable of making that sell, then, you know, all props to them.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it because Titanfall, okay, so Call of Duty, you typically have a ton of different weapons to choose from, and you have a ton of customization options, and you have, you may not have as many maps as Titanfall has, because Titanfall has 15, which is a good number, and I will say the quality of the maps is very good. There's one map that I actually am not a fan of, and that's because it's kind of open, and you can't really get the dichotomy of the pilots and the Titans balance well on that kind of map. But for the most part, the maps are well designed. But there's not that much customization. You get one shotgun, you get one rifle, you get one SMG, you get one assault rifle, you get four different anti-Titan weapons. You know, each Titan only has a selection of one of four. You can only use one of four weapons. There's a sufficient amount of maps, but everything around that, there's just not a lot of variation in it.
And I feel like that, I would imagine a lot of that has to do with balancing all of that stuff.
Oh, quite possibly. I think that, if you can get this game for $40, then do it, because it's not, I don't think it's worth 60. But what is here is very good. It's got a lot to offer to people who are just sick of Call of Duty, because it feels like... here's the best way I could describe it. Is when the Titanfall beta was open, and I was playing it, they also had a free weekend of Call of Duty Ghosts on Steam. I stopped playing Titanfall to play the Call of Duty beta at the Call of Duty free weekend, should I say. And it felt like Call of Duty Ghosts, which was a game that released in 2013, it felt like it was made 10 years ago. That's how different Titanfall is. And I was surprised at just how, I felt like a game like Call of Duty it felt like it was 10 years old. So, yeah, I mean, it's very good at what it does. I just disappoint. I'd rather they not included anything called campaign than what they did call campaign, because it just feels like it's just a waste of time to me. Especially considering they make you play it twice to get the other two Titan chassis.
Oh, so you have to pay it in order to unlock everything?
Yeah, if you want to unlock everything, you have to play the campaign twice, and it's 4 hours. It's 2 hours. The game makes you think that it has two campaigns. When it has one campaign, you just play it on the other team the second time. And it doesn't matter whether you win or lose each game, the same events happen, and it's hard to follow the story, and it, for the most part, it's just you playing the multiplayer match with people talking in the background, and you're not paying attention to them because you're too busy doing it, whatever it is you are doing in the game.
Okay. Well, the other thing I was going to ask you is, what are the modes?
There are no modes in this game that are new. There is Capture the Flag. There is Attrition, which is Team Deathmatch, that kind of works a little bit differently in the sense that it works on attrition points instead of just kills. If you kill another player, you get 4 points. If you kill a Titan, you might get 2 points. I'm not sure about that. If you kill an AI character, you get one. So... that's the only real difference. Other modes are Domination, which work the same. There's Last Titan Standing, which is the first team to destroy all of the enemy's Titans wins the round, and it goes on a round basis. And there is Pilot Hunt, which is basically Last Titan Standing, but with pilots instead.
So you kill the pilots, or do you hunt the pilots as a Titan?
You kill the pilots. It's pilot versus pilot.
Okay. So that's Team Deathmatch again, isn't
it? Team Deathmatch again, pretty much. And I will say this, the game doesn't lend itself to any mode apart from Hardpoint. I've just played Hardpoint exclusively because I don't think the game works terribly well on the other modes. So, I mean, Titanfall, what it is very good. They've put a lot of effort into it, and there's a lot of little details, like I killed a grunt, and his friend fell over it when he saw me do it. It was really cool, and, like, sometimes, if you wipe out all the grunts in a group, the grunts are the AI characters, by the way, if you wipe out all the grunts in a group except for one, sometimes you'll see, like, the last one, he, like, throws his gun down and just gives up and stuff. Like, there's so many little things like that that you know, start noticing over time, and that's really cool. It's just like stuff like that kind of disappoints me in that there's not a proper campaign, because maybe we could have seen more of that if there was, because it gets to a point where I'm just so concentrated on what other people are doing that I can't be looking at what this AI character is doing, because I've got to kill this guy and stuff. So it's kind of weird. The whole multiplayer only thing, like, is in its benefit in some ways, because you have all this cool parkour stuff and it works quite nicely together. But in other sense, like, they put stuff in that kind of just goes to the detriment of that. So I don't know, I like it. I prefer the Titan fighting over pilot fighting, because Titan fighting just turns it into an arena shooter. That's nice, because I'm good at outmaneuvering people.
like I'm the opposite. Yeah. I like the pilot fighting, because then, you know, you get the added mobility and the kind of, you know, the vertical nature of all the levels and stuff, and it adds something that's kind of different than we've seen in most
years. Yeah, and it's nice just sort of, you see a pilot running across the floor, and you just boost into them. It's like, yeah, enjoy having your face splattered all over my legs.
Yeah.
that could be taken so wrong.
There's probably, if you like multiplayer first-person shooters, there's probably something in here that you'll like. It's worth a try at the very least. And like I said, don't.
It's definitely a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. And the thing is this is something that probably nobody else cares about. But I'm amazed what they've done with the Source engine, especially, I mean, if you play it on PC and you've played every Valve game and you get a feel of how Source works, this game does not feel like a Source engine, even though you do notice the cracks of the Source engine sometimes. It feels like they just took the Call of Duty engine and put Titans in it and stuff, and it's really cool to see that they've made a Source engine game that looks good, which is also an achievement. Yeah.
Are you saying they don't look good?
I'm saying that Source Engine games don't look good. And if they
Source is pretty dated at this point.
Yeah.
It is, but I've always thought they gave their games a certain I guess because Valve makes very graphically simple games.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Valve tends to take the stance of it looks okay, it's passable visuals, just so it will run on everything including a potato. Whereas Titanfall, it looks nice. I mean, right now there's the PC version has some frame rate problems, in the sense that the engine will tell you that you're reaching 60 FPS, but it will still dip. But they say they're fixing that. So right now I have it running on lowest to sort of alleviate that. But I'm sure when they fix that, I can turn it all the way up. Because it's not demanding. It looks good, and it's not especially demanding as well.
Which I guess, just really quickly, because I don't want to get into this. This isn't our department. Which makes it all the more sad that apparently the Xbox One has problems running it properly, from what they said on what Digital Foundry.
Yeah, but what game doesn't the Xbox One have problems running?
Peggle 2 had
frame rate problems.
That's the problem, though, because this is a game that was at least designed for the most part around this system, or for the system, and this is only the start of the generation.
Yeah, I think it's more of a technology demo for Microsoft's. I'm not going to use the C word. Microsoft's Azure server.
The C word.
Yeah, I'm not going to use the C word.
I think it has become a cuss word now.
it's only because if you're in IT to some degree, you know how general the word cloud is. Like, if you have Gmail, you're using the cloud. It's as simple as that. And it's just a word. It's a marketing word, and I don't like using marketing words. Yeah, I think it's more of a technology demo for Microsoft's server farms, and that works quite well. I think the servers are a bit laggy now because there's a lot of people hitting them at once, but I think that will smooth out eventually. And for the most part, it works well online. Just there are some times where it's like, oh, a little bit of lag there.
I want to kind of bring it back a bit for a sec to the multiplayer only debate, so to speak. Because in the past, well, I just want to see what you guys think of this. Because, I mean, in the past, there's been, I mean, countless games where the focus has been single player, and then they add on a multiplayer game that, right, takes diverts resources, is not very good, nobody likes it, people complain. And then on the flip side, there have been a few instances, Battlefield comes to mind, where you have a multiplayer product that everybody loves, and then they divert resources and make a single player campaign that people just don't like. So now we have here a studio that's saying, well, we're going to put all of our energy and resources into making the best multiplayer vision that we want to make and not take away from that in any way to craft a single player game just for the sake of saying, oh, our game has single player and multiplayer. Isn't that a commendable approach? Isn't that what we want? Is making the game that they want to make?
That's not what we're complaining about, though. We're not complaining about the fact that they didn't tack on. Like, he says he doesn't like the single player, the campaign that they put in here. What we're arguing is that it's a harder sell to just say, okay, this is all you multiplayer, so it should be $60 because that's what we're used to paying for a video game. And I think that we've had this discussion before. We've had this with similar games as well. It's like, at what point does that value proposition crop in? Like, does an 8-hour single-player game only deserve to be $60 either? And, you know, it's hard to determine value because, honestly, if you can sell it, you can sell it. That's business. Yeah. But, it does become a harder sell for certain people when it's $60 and it's a game that's very dependent on how other people pay. Like, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but let's say you and I buy this game later on this year and everybody's moved on to the next Call of Duty and the next Battlefield. Granted, at this point, it probably won't be $60. But let's say you pay $60 for it and there's no online community. Like, that's not your fault. That's not even the game's fault.
Yeah, and especially considering, EA is a company that is notorious for taking down servers. And, I mean, I'm not saying this is necessarily going to happen to Titanfall, but what happens if in a year's time everyone stops playing it and the servers are gone and there goes your $60, you know, even if you bought it like 2 weeks before that. And this is it, is I didn't pay the equivalent of $60. EA were asking for, I bought the game and the season pass, I pre-ordered the game and the season pass, and EA were asking for £60, which is, what, $80-$90. And I didn't pay that, I didn't pay anywhere near that, in fact I paid half of that. Because I knew that I wasn't willing to pay anywhere near that for a multiplayer-only experience when, you know, games I've bought in the past, like Halo, Halo 3, Halo Reach, I paid £45 for Halo Reach, and I was glad I did because, you know, that game, I got a great multiplayer, I got a great single player, I got a great co-op out of it, you know? And I think that if you're going to... I'm one of these people, and I think if you offer a multiplayer game-only game... I mean, yeah, there's going to be less content there than you would have even if you just tacked on a single player. Like, as far as I'm concerned, even if the single player is not very good and you tacked it on, at least it's there, and you tried to justify the $60, and you had some resources put into it.
That's where I kind of disagree with that, just that last point, but it is what it is. I would personally just rather have them invest all their energy in what they want to make rather than just throwing in modes for the sake of modes.
It's a fair debate
whether you think it's worth $60 for that experience and whether that's totally fair, you know, on a personal level. Whether you feel for you as your type of gamer, is it worth you going out and paying $60 for a game that's multiplayer only? And like clearly a lot of people that is worth it, right?
Yeah.
And I can see why it wouldn't be worth it, but
Yeah, value is a very subjective thing. It's very personal. Everybody determines it differently. And like I said, if you can sell it for that price, you know, more power to your business. At the end of the day, it is to maximize your profits. I just wanted to make sure that we're not – I don't think Daniel and I are saying that, you know, Titanfall should have had a very detailed campaign mode because – I mean, I think it would have been awesome with Titanfall because it's so different to have a campaign with the giant mechs and stuff. But they don't need it. And they know what they were going for, and they did it. That's good on them. It's just
I don't know if I can. I'm qualified to speak on this because I paid half what they were asking you for anyway. I think that. I mean, in the UK, we're kind of in a unique. I wouldn't say unique position, a different position to the US because over the last 2 or 3 years, companies like EA specifically have been trying to get away with charging more than they have. I mean, I remember when. You know, a brand new game would have been £35, and now it's £45. But yet, it hasn't gone up in America, which is weird.
I was also going to say the other problem with this, and this is, you know, this doesn't affect any of us, but you know, just because it doesn't affect us doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I know, for example, and they fixed it since then. But like, for example, if you bought this game in Australia, there was no local servers for that game in Australia, so you know, it's also regional as well as far as what type of support you get. Ultimately, my biggest beef is so much of your entertainment is taken out of your hands with a online-only multiplayer game.
Yeah,
because I even think like, a local multiplayer game is different because at least you still have your friends around. And yeah, that is still dependent on who you have around and how often you can get together, but it's the same notion that so much of it is not, like, you don't buy a pack, it's good, and, you know, like, your enjoyment is dependent on what you do with it. It's dependent on what everybody else does with it as well.
Yeah, I definitely think that, I mean, if you're going to look at it from a purely objective content kind of side, I don't think Titanfall is worth $60. I would, $40 quite possibly, but $60 plus, what, $20-$30 for the season pass?
Well, I mean, then you have to pay, it's $50-$60 for Xbox Live if you're doing
that. Yeah, yeah, well, and there is that unless you're paying on PC, so, yeah.
So, it adds up.
I mean, what it does very well. Don't expect anything out of the campaign at all. If you like FPS multiplayer games, then Titanfall is going to be a breath of fresh air for you in some way or another. And if you're not into multiplayer FPSs, this game's probably not going to convince you, to be honest.
No, and in fact, I'd say if you want to play this game, you probably should be familiar with multiplayer FPSs.
Yes, because
it's a very complex one.
Like, yeah. It teaches you how to move and shoot, and that's it, really.
And
other than Titanfall, I've been playing versus the board because I have finished 999 now, and I have the worst version of that game, and it's annoying that the 3DS is region locked because then I could at least get a better version. But Nintendo put a fucking spanner in that plan, didn't they? If you like VNs, get Virtus Last Award because it's good. If you have a Vita, buy an American copy because somebody thought it would be a good idea to license the Japanese voice acting and sync all the English text up with it, which is not good because you can have a three very long sentence bit of dialogue and it'll be over in about 10 seconds. Because some Japanese sentences are longer, some Japanese sentences are shorter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, although if I will recommend that if you have an interest in Virtue's Last Reward, you buy 999 first, because obviously it's the prequel, and do not at all ever look at the wiki until you finish. I've also been playing Lego Marvel Super Heroes because I finally bought it after whining about the Lego games.
Isn't it delightful?
Oh my god! Like, I'm amazed at how imaginative they were with it. Actually,
yeah.
Like,
wait, why are you whining about the Ego games?
Because you were specifically were having a go at me for complaining about the Lego games because I wanted the best one and I wanted it cheap, and oh. They kept announcing a new best one by the time the other one has gotten cheap. So yeah, I bought. I saw that Lego Marvel was £5, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'll shut up and buy that. And it's really fun. Like, you can just go from being Spider-Man and shooting webs at people and doing the whole web-slinging thing across New York City to being Iron Man and flying across New York City. And I love all the little Stan Lee jokes that they have in there. They're really cool. I was outside Marvel headquarters because I thought that would be cool to go to, and Stan Lee got locked out and he wasn't very happy, and I was like, oh, poor Stan Lee. Yeah, it's very cool. I really like what they've done with it, and it's amazing how they managed to be really imaginative with these games and churn them out more often than they do Call of Duty games.
Well, I think the big part about it, and I think we said, is the fact that they just use so many different licenses that you don't realize that they are just kind of recycling the same engine over and over again. Because I think every year they come up with like 3 or 4 of them, and you don't necessarily mind it because you might enjoy Marvel, you might not enjoy The Hobbit, you might enjoy Star Wars, you might not enjoy Harry Potter.
People play all of them.
And, I mean, even if it's the same engine, just because, you know, you don't get to web shoot in Batman and stuff like that. Granted, a lot of the powers are pretty much the same thing with different coatings.
Yeah.
In the various games. But you can dress up a Batarang as a projectile in one game and an Asian gun in another game. Two different weapons, same effects. you know, it's a great sense of humor. I mean, personally speaking, I said this before, my favorite is still Lego City on the cover. It's, I think, the most original as well.
Because it is original, it's not licensed, so.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you also had the Lego movie, but that's, I guess, based on the movie, which I heard is really based on the movie, which I've always had an issue with when it came to licensed video games, and we'll get to that in a bit with The Last of Us. But what have you been playing, Jason?
Well, since the last time I was on, let's see. I did get in the Titanfall beta, so that was pretty cool. Still undecided what platform I'm going to end up playing the full game on, but probably PC. I finished Assassin's Creed 4, which was... I was pleasantly surprised. Like, it's probably... I think Assassin's Creed 2 is still my favorite. The engine's kind of starting to show some annoying, lingering issues, like just with animation and climbing things and stuff, but
have
I thought
you
it was overall.
Fix that?
No, and it's really frustrating sometimes when you're like, I'm pushing up on the joystick, go up. Why are you standing still? It drives me nuts. But in general, like overall, the game is still really good. Like I really like the whole pirate, skin coding, and for an annual franchise, like they do enough like different year to year that it's. It keeps interest as much as I loathe the annual release model. I also finished Fire Emblem Awakening, which is just a fantastic, fantastic game. But by the end, I thought both story-wise and gameplay-wise kind of faltered a little bit. It just kind of became contrived, and the AI starts cheating, basically, to try to beat you.
I haven't finished Fire Emblem Awakening, but I don't like the difficulty spikes. It has some really weird difficulty spikes, and it's
crazy difficult. And I'm so glad I didn't play on the permadeath mode, because I would have just been pulling my hair out. Like, it was already in, like, by the last 5 or so chapters, like, the things they do to, quote-unquote, challenge you, but really the AI is just cheating. Like, they'll just, all of a sudden, you're supposed to clear the battlefield, and you're down to one guy, and then, like, 6 more people will appear out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? Come on! Overall, I really enjoy the game. I really like the art style, and when it has the anime sequences and you have the 3D turned on, it looks so pretty. And besides those, I don't know what else. I guess that's pretty much it. It's been taking most of my time.
Fair enough. I guess that's me. And very quickly, I started Sleeping Dogs because it was one of the Xbox games with gold. I figured I might as well, since they're all eating into my hard drive at this rate. I like Sleeping Dogs, but for the life of me, I just keep on thinking, I wish this game didn't take itself so seriously. It would be so much more fun.
You want it to be more Saints Row?
Yeah. I mean, even if it's not more Saints Row, like, I feel like if the combat was a bit more flashy and over the top, it would be more enjoyable. Like, I mean, I guess a comparison, and I hate making this comparison, but it is the best, one of the best ones on the market right now, would be Batman, the Arkham series, where, like, you kind of have this feel to the combat, and it looks very, I hate using the term cinematic, but it looks very, you know, it's very Ivy and stuff like that, and it feels like it's very kinetic. Where this is just kind of like you wait until somebody attacks you, or you kind of punch them really slow, and then nobody really does anything while you're attacking one person. So it's just kind of this very dull back and forth match. And I feel like if they kind of expanded that and made it a bit more, you know, chaotic and stuff like that, that would be fun. And the same thing with, like driving. And this kind of, and I know this is based off of the True Crimes engine or serious, but I really wish you didn't get penalized for doing stuff in an open world game at times. Like, if you have me chasing or pursuing somebody, it sucks that I get points taken away from me if I run into something. Like, you want me to do a high speed chase, but you want me to do a very carefully driven high speed chase. That doesn't make any sense at all.
I kind of like that from the, like, because, I mean, it was kind of annoying if I was to think about it, like, in a moment-to-moment basis. But, like, when you think of it in terms of the whole, I mean, I watched a video of this, so this is just me repeating somebody else's opinions but that I agree with, and I hadn't realized until they mentioned it. But, like, the whole game is about Wei Shen doesn't quite know who he is. He's got this cop life, and he has the triad life, and they sort of interfere with each other, and he can't manage them. And I kind of like how the experience system plays into that, despite the fact that, you know, you get punished for running into a bollard by accident, and you've lost at that point. You've lost a whole third of the copy XP you could have gotten. But I think in a whole context of the game, it's really nice that that thing is in there and that they tried it. What you were saying about the over-the-top combat, if you are in a car chase and you are shooting, that's the kind of over-the-top that I like the game.
That doesn't feel like, oh, it's, it doesn't feel like it's taking itself, it feels like it's taking itself too seriously. And again, that's like another one of those problems where it's like penalizing you for trying to be creative with that. Like, you have to be really careful. Like, I got in trouble once. I mean, not in trouble. You don't really get busted for it, but you get, you know, as you said, points taken away. Because, like, part of one of the elements, and this is something I think they could have made a bit more silly, because it is kind of silly. One of the things you can do is you can jack a car in motion while you're driving something. And what happens is the car you're driving will continue on its momentum for a bit until it stops. So if you don't end it up, I got in trouble because I was trying to jack another car. And once I jumped on the second one, my car continued driving and ended up hitting a civilian. And you get points taken off for killing an innocent. Like, that wasn't my fault. Like, you want me to do this thing, but the car is I can't control it once I jump off of it. And I'm not going to line up a shot so it doesn't kill somebody once I jump off of it. That just, again, it's taking itself way too serious in on those moments of silliness. Like, jumping from one car to another isn't something you do every day. So that should, those moments should be treated more comical than they are. But I'm enjoying it. It's a very different setting to video games, even though, you know, very different settings. Granted, it's a bit, I don't want to say predictable, but it is something that you kind of, it's kind of like, I don't want to say The Departed, because The Departed itself is based off of a Japanese movie, which name escapes me right now. But yeah, the whole thing about an undercover cop who might have gone too deep undercover and you don't know where his loyalties are and stuff like that. And sometimes I feel like the game moves very fast, and I've been paying attention to, apparently. Like, you start off as you start off as a kind of a member of the, you know, you're trying to get into the gang, and next thing you know, you're being invited to like one of the head dude's wedding, and I'm like, oh, they went from not trusting you to inviting you to their wedding and stuff like that. That was very quick. But I guess out of that, you know, this is, I guess, a problem with open world games is it's really hard to tell time. Like, you don't know how long these things take. So it's hard to say. It could have been a couple of months in between these missions. You don't know. Everything seems to take place on the same night. It is what it is. Other than that, I picked up Bit Trip Runner 2, some really long title for the Wii U because they have a $5 sale since it sold a million copies and they want to reward consumers. Enjoy the game. I can't play it for long, though. For some reason, I'm not really sure what it is. I don't know if it's a mixture of the background and the speed and the graphics or whatever. The game gives me a headache. It makes my vision all blurry, so I can't play for more than 15 minutes without shutting it off. But
I have the same thing with Super Hexagon. It's really weird. I mean, I know that's part of the game in Super Hexagon, but, like, it gets really unplayable where I just can't concentrate on what it is that I'm doing.
Yeah, like, I feel
the same way about Super Hexagon too.
It's really weird. I don't know what triggers it, but like, I'll play it, and I want to enjoy it, and I am enjoying it, but I start playing it. I do like 2 or 3 missions. I'm like, okay, I'm done for today. Because I don't know when it happened, but my vision's just like all types of messed up right now. So it's been really so. It's a very enjoyable endless runner. It's an endless runner. They are kind of a dime. I guess it's not an endless runner because it does end and it has stages and different obstacles. But it's kind of, I don't know what you would call that game. Is it like a on-rails platformer? Something.
I would just call it an endless runner. That's what it is. I mean, it ends, but...
Yeah, I have to say that defeats the purpose of it being an endless runner, though. And I was going to say the other thing that doesn't make it an endless runner is that the stages aren't randomized. Like, you know exactly, like, it's trial and error. You can continue doing the stage over and over again, turn the patterns and stuff like that. So it's a very difficult sell. But it's a fun game. I think it's still on sale for $5. It's totally worth it. I will say, I hate the fact that that's the one thing Nintendo's online system is extremely intelligent about, is that they always know when the game's on sale for your digital deluxe promotion, so like you don't get the $15 for sure, you get $5 credits instead of that, so that's really, they usually do that pretty damn quickly. So I think that's it. I'm sure I'm playing something on my 3DS, but I honestly don't remember what. So we're moving on to news, and we're going to kick it off with something we didn't get to talk about last week because we forgot, and it did come back up this week, and kind of mentioned it at the start of the show as well, but the Last of Us movie.
I thought we did talk about that.
No, we had it in the notes, and we forgot to talk about it, and I think we talked about it after the show ended, and we all kind of agreed we didn't know what the point of it was.
Yeah, I think we did, yeah.
And I kind
of... What the point of the Last of Us movie was? I think it's for people who can't play games.
I don't understand that at all, because they're like, people who can't play games, they have a whole bunch of stories that are kind of like that. And
yeah, but for this specific story, I mean...
And it's not going to get people interested in games, because The Last of Us is kind of a one-of-a-kind thing, at least now. So I don't know.
But taking the game parts of it out, like, it's still an interesting story about these two characters and their kind of emotional and physical journey. You could definitely, there's compared to a lot of other game to movie adaptations like Need for Speed, there's actually a lot to work with there in terms of just the purely narrative experience. I think it adds a lot to have the gameplay elements, but you could extract the story out of there and tell it interestingly in another medium.
Here's what I think about that, right? Is the whole point of The Last of Us... The reason why I like The Last of Us for what it is because... We hear people talking about ludonarrative dissonance all the time, and for those that don't know what that is, that's when the gameplay doesn't match up with what the story that's trying to be told. I mean, a lot of people... through that criticism at Bioshock Infinite, and I can see why. I couldn't tell you whether I agree with it or not, but I can see why people would think that. And I don't think that's a big deal with The Last of Us, and that's the whole point, is it has a story that's non-conventional because it's not happy ending, it's not like space aliens attacking, you know, save the world. And it worked. The gameplay works for the most part. I mean, the gameplay can be a bit wonky at times, but it works in the sense of the story that's trying to be told.
Yep.
And I think that if you take out the gameplay, that just defeats the point of The Last of Us entirely, because it's the sort of idea, the poster child of this can work. You can have kind of a traditional third-person shooter and have a story that works with it at the same time.
Yeah, I was also going to say, I mean, again, you know, The Last of Us may do something different, but I will get to this in just a second, but part of it to me is that the story in its on its own isn't that special when you take it into the realm of movies. We've kind of seen, I mean, there aren't a ton of them, but we have kind of seen movies where it's kind of like this older figure kind of escorting a younger figure through some type of natural disaster, or, you know, we've seen The Road, which is what The Last of Us got compared to often. You can make a case for 28 Days Later, Children of Men, if you wanted to go over the top, Shoot 'em Up. So there are movies with kind of similar themes, and even those weren't huge things. But the thing that really kind of messes with me now, I guess, is that they're saying that this will be a direct adaptation of the game storyline now. And I mean, granted, it can work. I mean, the game takes 15 hours, and most of that is gameplay. So, I mean, I'm sure you can cut out some non-essential parts and squeeze it down to a two-hour movie. But I've never been a fan of kind of a direct adaptation. I mean, this is one of the reasons why people don't enjoy the first two Harry Potter movies that much, is because those are pretty much page to screen, and it doesn't make for a very entertaining movie because there are different rules for a movie than there are for a book. And I feel like if they were to do a Last of Us movie, they could have taken the universe and expanded on that instead of saying, like, we're just going to take the game story and replicate that in a movie form in some fashion.
Well, the only reason why I disagree with that is because while The Last of Us universe has its own interesting hooks, I think the heart and core of that story in that game is Joel and Ellie. And if you take any, I mean, you could take that world and tell another story that's also interesting, but like,
okay, yeah. Well, I guess while he's gone, the other thing I was kind of curious about, and I've seen this defense a couple of times from people, is that this is for people who didn't play the game or people who don't enjoy the game. I don't get that when, at this point, we don't have a release date for this movie, so at best, it's 2 years after the game.
In which case, they won't care.
Yeah. Like, I mean, The Last of Us is a great game. I don't think anybody's going to take it away, but how many people are going to go back and play it? And again, the system they can't replay it on right now, because it doesn't work on the PS4, 2-3 years later, just to kind of experience this. Like, I get the appeal of it, I guess, in that. But if it came out soon with the video game and not 2, 3, 4 years later, because right now we have a producer and we have the fact that it's going to be adapted. So at earliest, I actually expect it to be 2016. It could maybe push 2015. I mean, it takes about a year, but we shall see.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's kind of I really don't understand who it's for. Because anybody that's played the game already is not going to watch the film because they know how it ends.
Well, I think the people who are going to watch the film are going to be the people who played the game, because right now that's the only people it appeals to, because like I said before, if you kind of take it as a whole, just the setting and stuff, I guess it depends on how you market it. It seems like it's not that special. It's kind of a not zombie movie. And even not zombie movies are very numerous in Hollywood nowadays. We've seen big budgets, you know, we've seen World War Z last year. We've seen I Am Legend, stuff like that, where it's kind of these human stories in these supernatural worlds and stuff like that. So I'm kind of curious to see how they would market it and stuff like that, to see if it's worth it. I get that people are champion it because you want to see a good video game adaptation and you want to see it based off of a good game, and the people figured that this has a strong story, so that must mean it makes it great, it will make a strong movie. We will see. Like, honestly, the only thing we know about it is that it's a direct adaptation of the game, and that it's being produced by Sam Raimi. who has a interesting track record as it is.
Yeah.
And that's not to say anything. I actually like Sam Raimi. I'm, you know, Spider-Man, Evil Dead, and all that other stuff. But he also has a very, he has his style, which is a lot more, I want to say comical than what The Last of Us went for.
Yeah.
This one, I don't really know what there is to say, but it came out this week that Sony claimed that they took Drive Club back to the drawing board, which is part of the reason for the delay. It was a very vague quote that a lot of people seem to have interpreted in many different ways. From what I understood, and I think Sony clarified, it doesn't mean that the game was delayed again, which technically I guess is impossible since it doesn't have a release date, so you can't delay something that doesn't have a window. But yeah, it just means that what they had before wasn't working, and they decided to fix it.
Yeah, it's highly possible that they just had core systems that didn't mess with each other. Because, I mean, that's the reason for, the supposed reason anyway, for Watch Dogs delay. And I'd rather, especially because Drive Club is supposed to be like a proper social game, it's good that they're actually taking the time to fix whatever problems it has. Because, you know, it's gonna either, it's whatever was there that was broken is probably gonna be the death of it had they just released it. So.
Yeah, and honestly speaking, right now, lucky enough for Sony, they don't need it right now because the system's selling well enough without many. It's selling well enough so they can use it as something to kind of prop it up over the summer when it does become, the lineup tends to dry up again instead of rushing it out just because they said it would be out at launch. So, there's that.
And I think, though, they really need to get Drive Club right because they have... I think that Sony should really make sure that they get Drive Club right because for a while it's going to be the only rating exclusive they have. So,
yeah.
They need it to be there until GT comes out, at least. And they need it to be good because of that.
Yeah. We also had the announcement of Costume Quest 2. And, well, if Daniel hates CG trailers, I'm kind of curious what you think of this announcement trailer.
I watched it, and I knew it was going to be just Tim Schafer and Double Fine making some funnies. And in that case, I don't really mind. I mean, because Costume Quest, I mean, I hate it for AAA. Like, because I know that indie developers, they don't have the most resources ever, and I know that, like, I know they don't have the games take a shorter amount of time to make, so they would have, they would probably have less of the game nailed when they announce it. So I'm not terribly concerned when they do this kind of thing, like for small titles. And, you know, it's Double Fine, you know what to expect out of them. And the funny sort kind of helps alleviate the problem of no gameplay, because, I mean, I'm not a fan of Tim Schafer, but he's kind of, I like his humor, so.
I guess not so much by the lack of footage or anything. I was actually surprised by the lack of details. Like, they didn't even announce a system or systems. They just said it's coming to consoles and I think PC.
I guess so. But well, it's going to come out for Halloween, so we already know that.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, that makes sense. A Costume Quest.
Well, the first one came out at Halloween, you know, so.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that I think the people that really liked Costume Quest were kind of vocal about it. And I started playing it a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't gotten that far into it. But I can see why people like it. It's kind of cutesy. It's very simple. It does what it does, you know, to a reasonable degree of success. So I can see why people really like it. And it's kind of the thing where you're like, oh, it's Halloween. Let's go play Costume Quest in the spirit of it.
Yeah, just I love that it's just a you know, holiday themed game.
Yeah,
it just kind of runs with that idea, you know, whatever maybe it's not the most perfect game, but like it's a cool idea. It'd be cool to see more games like that.
It's novel. I hope they expand on it, because I like the premise of the first game. Wasn't too keen on the execution for the most part. But yeah, it's a fun little thing, and hopefully they get more costumes this time.
Hope they flesh out the RPG mechanics a little more.
But I don't remember the game enough. I might have had an issue with it. I was going to say, I guess part of it being a simple RPG is what kind of makes good appealing, is it was kind of like a one or two button RPG. I guess more so than a one button RPG. So, yes, what else did we... this one, while Jason is with us, if he's still with us, The Witcher 3 got delayed until next... The Witcher 3 got delayed until next year.
No!
Yeah, that's what I have to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, what is the old expression? A delayed game is delayed until it releases, but a bad game is a bad game forever. So, yeah, I mean,
and I believe
it
got delayed till February... Right?
They didn't say it.
So that's
not
too bad.
And at least they prepared people for it.
I think
it's
they
said
February,
like,
and then...
Yeah.
I mean...
Okay.
I think we're getting the lag spikes again. But, I was just going to say it's only February, so it's not too bad. Obviously there will be plenty of stuff to do during the holidays, so... There's a silver lining, but... That was my most anticipated game for this year, and now it's gone.
Yeah, and at least they gave you time. I mean, they delayed it in March.
Yeah.
It's not like they waited until like October to say that it's not coming out this year.
Right.
That CD Projekt are very good at what it is that they do. So if they need time, give it to them, you know?
Exactly.
Yes, and I think the final piece of news, and not really news, I guess it was the BAFTA Awards were held this week.
The BAFTA Awards are very curious. I mean, I didn't watch it this year because I knew what to expect out of it. Because they tend not to differ, but I think that a lot of people could learn from what it is that the BAFTAs do, particularly the VGXs and Spike.
Well, I guess what are the BAFTAs?
BAFTA stands for British Academy for Film and Television. So normally, like, video games is not something that they were initially designed to sort of be doing, but it's cool to see like something like that moving with the times, I guess, and celebrating something that's emerging at the very least. And I mean, video games are mainstream, no matter what anyone likes to think, you know. So it's cool to see that an academy like that is acknowledging it.
Yeah. What were you going to say about the award? I guess the big thing, that the big takeaway from these, and it's done in a professional setting, and I think that's always been the issue with the VGAs, is that if you watch it as an outsider, it doesn't seem to be a very professionally done performance.
Yeah, well, the VGAs, let's not equate with the BAFTAs either. Like, they're not intended to be, like,
they're not intended to be the Oscars.
right. And that's essentially, you know, kind of the track that the BAFTAs are, is that they're, like, a legit kind of industry award. Which we do have. I mean, we have the award, that awards that are given out at DICE are kind of our equivalent, I guess, but obviously those aren't as high profile as the VGAs.
Yeah. I think ultimately that's the problem. It's like there's the BAFTAs, there's DICE awards. There are a lot of awards that are actually really well done, just none of them get televised or, you know, hardly get streamed. Like, you can't probably find a DICE 2014 awards online anywhere. And I think ideally, I don't want, if video game ever does get a major award show, I don't want it to be like the Oscars. The Oscars are very stuffy at times. I mean, this year was fun. Arden's kind of new, since he has that very safe kind of uncle who knew, I think somebody described it as. And she got out into the audience and stuff, and then it was interactive. But I've always kind of been, especially in recent years, towards the Golden Globes. with kind of a more relaxed but still formal setting. And I think if you kind of combine that against with the VGA, because I like the VGA's presentation. It's very interactive. It's very nice for people at home who get to watch it. It's visually pleasing. It's the stuff in between it that's always been the problem.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not going to discuss winners because you can just find out.
It's the ass.
Yeah.
One for most everything.
The problem I have with the BAFTAs is they seem to, because, I mean, okay, you could maybe understand this because they are the British Academy for Film and Television, but there was a lot of film and TV people there, and like, I could understand.
I wonder why.
I can understand getting somebody like Dara O'Brien. Like, I'm going to say all these names, and people from not from Britain are not going to know who any of these people are. I can understand someone like Dara O'Brien, who is a you could say he's a comedian. Like, I was going to say TV comedian, but he's a comedian. Doesn't matter what. I mean, he's spoken about video games before, and people know he's into video games, so that's kind of cool because it's like somebody that those who aren't particularly into gamer culture and the industry can relate to. But aside from that, we had Stephen Moffat, who is the guy who writes for Doctor Who, which was kind of weird. And he was asked by, I think, VG247 what the last game he played was, and he said Portal 2. And he doesn't. And they asked him what he thinks about game writing, and he's like, I don't know. I can't imagine what it would be like to write for a game. So that was kind of curious why they got him. And some of the presenters, like Carol Vorderman, who I don't know if she has done. And I watched her presentation. Like, she gave best game, and I watched what she had to say beforehand earlier. And she mentioned her son, so maybe her son's in the industry or something. But she's been in TV for a long time, and she's not somebody, like, if you're from Britain, you would go, what? Carol Vorderman, you know? That woman that was on Countdown.
Yeah.
Carol Vorderman. So, I don't understand why they got a lot of these people here. I mean, there was a kids' TV program presenter that was on the red carpet, and I'm just like, why, what's with the TV people, you know? Like, I don't know. It's really strange, that's all, that there's so many TV people there.
Yeah, I can, and like you said, it is, you know, it's not just a game show, right? It's also film and TV, but I definitely understand, like, you could have game people presenting the game awards, at least.
Yeah.
Or, like, that's kind of my problem with the VGAs, kind of more abstractly, like, or VGX now, like, I don't mind celebrity appearances and stuff, but, like, they should be related to the games somehow, right? They should be actually working games, not just Joel McHale, who doesn't know what he's talking about, making stupid jokes.
Yeah, and, like, if you, the last thing you think about when you ask a Briton, well, what do you associate with Carol Vorderman, the last thing that anybody would say would be video games. You'd say Countdown, you'd get maybe Loose Women, you'd get these are TV shows, by the way. You'd get you'd get maybe somebody would mention the fact that she has a PhD in maths and she's really clever because she is. But video games,
and you get her to present,
and you get her to present the best game award, and you have people like Ian Livingstone there as well. Like, why didn't Ian Livingstone present the best game award?
I feel like we should know these people. Or get I don't know either way.
For the record, Ian Livingstone is the guy who used to head up Tiga, and he was the head of IDOS until recently. And he's been in the industry, in the UK at least, for a very long time.
Well, I think that's part of the problem is, and I think we've had this discussion before, is the industry needs to work on making its assets more, I guess, face-worthy. Like, we know actors, we know directors, we know musicians, we know producers, but you know a handful of video game creators, and usually it's the same ones everybody knows, and there's so many of them. And I don't know how you go about it, because unlike a movie, you see a movie star on the screen, you hear a musician sing. Like, you don't always get to see a person who's making a video game. It's like, I don't want to use this as disparaging. It's like everybody's like the movie support group, like everybody who makes the special effects or who mixes the sound. Like, you don't see those people. And it's that's the entire video game industry. It's like the people who are behind the scenes because what they make is a digital creation, and that's their product. And you don't get to see, you know, they don't put their faces to it. They don't, you know, they put their unique stamp of music because, you know, you don't get video. Like, even when video game music gets performed, it's not performed by the people who composed it.
I would like to see, I think, I don't see this very often, which is strange, but we have a lot of video games that say, look, we've got Gary Oldman playing as this character, or, you know, movie star X playing as this character, and I would like to see more of those kinds of people present these awards, because, you know, people like Elijah Wood and Jack Black and stuff like that, you know?
Because they're involved with the creation, right? And they clearly care about these projects, and they're also names that are known in other medium. But you know, at least they're having an impact on this one, and it's not like, oh, let's just grab this person because they're a famous face from TV, even though they've never made a game in their life.
I guess on the flip side is like maybe they don't want to go to these shows. Like I assume maybe they reach out to them. And they don't want to attend, or because I mean, like even in Hollywood, you don't always get people who attend the Oscars or the Golden Globes because they're filming it or they're doing something else. And I can't imagine if it's I don't want to use the term lesser, but if it's something that they see as smaller than that, like they probably don't want to take time out of their schedule, especially if they're not up for an award to present something. Like, what was the last game Elijah Wood was in?
He was in Broken Age.
Broken Age, yeah.
Okay.
And so was Jack Black, actually.
Jack Black shows up pretty much. Well, the VGX was different last year, but he's usually pretty much around the VGX because he was around everywhere for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, like Elijah Wood, for example, he does a TV show, and I assume he still does movies from time to time. I don't remember the last time I saw him, but maybe it was during his filming schedule. He didn't want to take a day off to go, you know, to an award show or something like that. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen. And like you said, especially being that a lot of people do, like, you know, these aren't televised, so it's not like they're getting much publicity from it. And the VGX probably it has a reputation, and I don't know if you want to be associated with that just yet.
It's an interesting problem.
Yeah, and one we've discussed before, and we'll continue to discuss, I think the VGX exists. Honestly speaking, I think that video games will need to find it's a new age medium, a new age. I think what's going to happen eventually, and what should happen maybe, is we'll have some type of streaming YouTube, Twitch, Ustream award show that is produced by fans who maybe start off small, but as time grows, it kind of, you know, it develops and they'll get more people. Because I'm sure you can get it out of, you know, and the other thing is timing. Video games are on a very tight schedule, so sometimes you can't send out a lot of people to New York or LA or, you know, any of these places to go to the award show. So you have to find a venue that's going to be someplace to host it. I mean, ideally, I don't even know if anybody does it. There should be an E3 award show. That should be when the award show is aimed for.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, in the sense that that's when most of the industry is together, and use the perfect time to celebrate the year that has passed while you're looking forward to what's coming in the future.
But that's
just,
that's a different discussion topic.
Let's say Sunday night, like E3 usually is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. That Sunday night, you have an award show before anybody does their press conference. And you have all these people who are probably good up anyhow. And, you know, just kind of give them a night to unwind or react.
But, like, E3 is about, like, what's coming up and not what's been, like, and also it's in the middle of the year. So, it would fit more. I mean, DICE is in February. I think that's fine. Or GDC. I mean, most of the industry, you know, especially the creators in the industry go to GDC. It's in March.
Doesn't GDC have an award show?
Yeah, the Game Developers Awards. It's not quite.
And I mean, you can have awards show in the middle of the year. Maybe people don't. I mean, like the BET Awards are in the middle of the year. MTV Movie Awards are in June, I think. So stuff like that happens. When would you have it? I mean, I think the VGAs being in December has always been stupid because the year's not over yet.
Yeah.
And
but I think in the same way, like E3, like half of next year's candidates have already been out, and we're gonna the clock.
But that's perfectly fine then, because the whole point of an award show is to give it time to think about it. You give 6 months into the air. I mean, granted, there's a lot of people who probably moved on and stuff like that.
Couldn't you just do it at GDC? And, you know, whether
it's changing the current one
or scrapping it and making somebody new. Well, I just think that timing makes a lot more sense.
I mean, one of the things is there's also multiple GDCs. I mean, I think we think of the one coming up as GDC, but that everybody had, like, GDC happens four or five times a year.
But this is the main event, GDC, though.
Yeah, and I get your point, but like I said, GDC already has an award show.
But why not? Couldn't you just make that the award show that you want to hoist up?
You could do that. You could do the DICE Awards. You can do BAFTA. But I'm saying if somebody was to start a brand new one, I think around E3 would be fine because that's when people are bunched together. I'm just thinking of it as a convenience thing because there aren't a lot of times. Like, you know, I guess even the Golden Globes is kind of disingenuous in this fact because it's for the foreign press and stuff like that. But it always takes place in Hollywood. It always takes place in the United States. It doesn't alternate between the different countries. And gaming is a very global thing. I mean, some of our biggest companies are Japanese, and we're seeing European developers emerge now, too. So, you know, it's the one time where Europe and Japan and the States are all kind of together. Because, say, Japan doesn't always tend to be with GDC. I assume Europe doesn't either. Because, really, it's mostly if you're an indie developer here or a bigger publisher, you're looking for talent and you're looking for work. Like, would you come all the way from Japan to do that? Or Europe?
Yeah, why not?
Well, because, I mean, from a business standpoint, it probably doesn't make that much sense. It's probably not that cost-effective. Like, I'm sure people, I mean, Nintendo's going to be there, I assume.
I mean, it's more than that, though, too, right? It's like a knowledge-share kind of conference, networking.
It is, and I think that would kind of also kind of tell you if it's there for conferencing and you're just kind of awarding other people. But I guess that's a great way to conference as well. It's just one of those things where there are very few times where people are together. Tokyo Game Show doesn't have many American companies. At this point, it doesn't have very many Japanese companies either. Eurogamer is more for the consumer. Gamescom is very tiny. Maybe somebody can aim one around PAX East. I think that would be more fan-driven, but that would be interesting to see them put on.
Anyway, we're getting way off topic.
Yeah, there was no topic. I mean, honestly, I didn't know what to talk about with the BAFTAs, but we moved up. Yes, it's been a very quiet week for news, and hopefully that changes this week, since, as Jason alluded to, it is GDC. Usually not a place for many announcements.
We've got a Sony VR thing coming, at the very least. Or yes, people think it's VR, anyway.
There's also, Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes comes out this week, Infamous Second Son... We have some releases.
That's not, we've had releases. We've had South Park. We didn't talk much about. Well, actually, you did talk about South Park. We've had Dark Souls 2, which we didn't talk about much or at all. I don't know anybody on the show who actually plays it.
No.
Martin plays everything.
yeah, releases aren't a problem. It's the news that's really just dragging. And that's not even true, because we've had some very hectic weeks, which is just a really quiet one. And I think it's because it's between GDC and... I mean, we had MPD numbers, but it was what it was. I guess we'll have more news in a couple of weeks, especially when everybody's financial year is kind of ending. We can expect more... Oh, PopCap had day off this week. Yeah.
And I don't understand. It's just EA's continuing habit of hiring people and then decimating the companies. I honestly
don't blame EA. I've always been curious as to why people continue to sign up with EA if they see a pattern. Like, do they expect they won't be the one?
Like, and it's not like PopCap wasn't a successful company beforehand. because they were. I don't know.
I mean, you know how it is. It's just whoever makes... someone gets to make a lot of money when EA buys the studio, and then they're not even necessarily involved anymore after that.
Yeah, I was about to say, I assume those aren't the ones who get fired first off either, so... Yeah, it does suck, though, because there's a picture going around. I'm sure you've seen it. It's an old picture of, like, all the companies, Maxis, and a bunch of companies EA has purchased and have killed off over time.
Yeah.
So... but we're going to skedaddle for this week. Hopefully we get to record, but if we were supposed to do this this week, but if not, this week's Nerds on the Rocks will be a very interesting one, I hope. It will be video games that we think would make great movie adaptations. It's kind of continuing off of our conversation of The Last of Us and with the Need for Speed movie coming out this week. Thought it'd be an interesting point to talk about, and... yeah, I don't know if any of you are around, but you can always offer suggestions, but you know, that will be up on Friday, if anything. So for Jason, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 133.